Good morning, it's Barb McClellan, and my show's called Turning Ourselves Upside Down. This is Cobequid Community Radio, 97.5 CIOE FM, the voice of your community and the voice of Fall River. I'm a lawyer, and I have my own business in Fall River. It's called Fall River Law Office, and this week we're going to continue our conversation about real estate and buying a house. So the previous show, we talked about all the things that we would discuss in our first meeting once you hired me or another lawyer, and these would be the things that I would talk about with you. So now we're going to talk about, well, after you leave that first meeting, what am I doing and what are you doing? So when we last left off, you would be off to see the bank to figure out what amount of money you were borrowing, the product you were going to choose, and then the bank would send me mortgage instructions. And you would also get in touch with your house insurance and get me a binder letter sent. So the next time you'd hear from me would be once I received those mortgage instructions. So they would come to me by fax or by email, and I would either give you a call or send you an email with a copy of all the details of what I've received. And usually I want to know that the amount you're borrowing, the rate, you mean the interest rate, the term, the amortization, and the payment schedule is correct. Once you let me know that, then we are able to type up those documents and get things ready for the next meeting that I'll have with you a few days or a week before the closing. Usually, I will try to set an appointment date after at the end of our first meeting because it's important to have that deadline in mind in terms of when I have to have things ready for you to sign and for when you have to have things done for me. So let's talk about the things that I'll be doing. And I think it's important so that when you come in on that second visit, you'll understand the things that I'll be working on. So the first thing that we do is order a tax certificate. So a tax certificate is something in writing that confirms that the property taxes on this property that you're buying are paid up to date. We also can call, and we do this as well, the HRM tax department and check on the taxes verbally as well. And find out if the property taxes have been paid, and we have to do what's called an adjustment on that, and I'll explain that in a few minutes. Now, the reason we also get it in writing is for some reason, when we call, if they've given us incorrect information over the phone, the tax certificate in writing will confirm what the taxes are and if they're up to date or outstanding. This is important information for us to then prepare what's called the adjustments. And this is something that we work on together with the seller's lawyer. So what we're trying to do is come up with a figure that basically is exactly to the penny how much are we sending over on the closing date. And you're probably thinking, well, whatever the purchase price is. Well, the adjustments, which is something that I'll show you when you come in on the few days or a week before the closing when we meet to sign your mortgage, will be called a statement of adjustments because you've paid, let's say, a deposit, so you've already put $1,000 or $2,000 down. That gets subtracted off the amount that we send over. And we do what's called a tax adjustment. So basically, property taxes are adjusted or proportioned right up to the date of closing where the seller is responsible for up to that date. If they've paid beyond the closing date, then we do an adjustment and we give them some money back. So it's a mathematical calculation that's much, much easier to understand in person when we do the calculation. But the important part of that is depending on the time of year that you're purchasing a home. Like right now in nearing the end of August, there's going to be another property tax bill that will come out sometime the end of August into September, and it will be due at the end of October. The one thing that I can say about property taxes to a new home buyer is the property taxes are just the opposite of any other bill that you pay. So say, for example, your cell phone bill. You get your cell phone bill for August, you get it in September. So it's past usage. When it comes to property taxes, when you pay your property taxes, you pay them forward. So let's talk about property taxes. So the property tax year runs from April 1st to March 31st of each year. So in the end of March of each year, the HRM sends out a property tax bill, which is based on half of whatever last year's taxes are. And the reason it's based on half of whatever last year's taxes are is because the council hasn't set the budget for the upcoming year. So that's done in April or May. So once that tax bill is received sometime in March, it's due the end of April. So when that bill is paid, that means that you've paid your property taxes from April 1st of that year right up to and including September the 30th. We're going to take a break now and we'll continue this conversation on CIOE 97.5 FM. Hi, it's Barb and we're back. This is CIOE, Community Cobequid Radio 97.5. We're talking about real estate today and property taxes. In the summertime, or after HRM sets their rates in terms of residential tax rates, we get another bill, which is basically in August or September. It's due the end of October. And basically, it indicates what the full year of taxes are. They subtract off whatever you've paid in April, and then your final bill, as they like to call it, is the amount that's due the end of October. So when that one's paid, again, it pays it right to March 31st of the following year. So taxes come out twice a year. The first one in April is called the interim tax bill, and then the final bill is the one that comes out in September due the end of October. Okay, so that's one thing that we'll be working on until we meet again. We'll be preparing your mortgage, so literally typing it up and filling in the amount you're borrowing and interest rate and all of that stuff. We talked about in my previous show about getting a new location certificate. Hopefully by, shortly after our meeting or even at our meeting, you've decided whether to get a new one or get title insurance. So we will get in touch with a surveyor and ask them to prepare that. And we like to get it done, you know, hopefully well in advance of the closing so we can have a look at it and you can see it and decide, decide whether or not it's to your satisfaction. Hopefully it is and there's no encroachment. Because that's really what the surveyor is looking for, to point out to you as a prospective buyer if there's anything like the shed next door encroaching or your driveway is half on the neighbor's property. And if that's the case, then we send it to the other lawyer and say, fix it. And how they would fix it would be, you know, in a variety of ways. And perhaps that could be another topic of topic for a future show. So title insurance is the other option, as we talked about, and there's forms and stuff for us to fill out to get that in place for you. We also have to make sure that your water test results have passed, and obviously your realtor would make sure of that. We need to have a copy of that. Sometimes the septic tank needs to be pumped, so we have to be sure that we get that from the seller's lawyer on closing. Again, you've been advised by me to get that insurance binder letter sent to me, so we're looking for that or following up and getting that done. Sometimes there's hot water tanks, furnaces, or other equipment in the house that you've agreed to either assume or the seller has agreed to pay it out. If it's going to be assumed, let's say for example a propane tank with Wilson's, you're responsible to get in touch with Wilson's to make a financial application, as I understand, and then a letter needs to be sent to me from Wilson's to confirm that you've assumed the lease. The seller's lawyer on closing will be looking for that because they want to make sure that you've assumed that lease and their client is no longer responsible. We'll also advise the other lawyer how you want to take title to the property. Taking title to the property just means how do you want the deed written into your name? If it's you alone or you and your spouse, there's also two different ways to take title to property in two people's names. One way is in joint tenancy and the other is tenants in common. And I have to ask that question when we meet because there is a difference. There's a huge difference. If you take title in both of your names as joint tenants, which most spouses do, it means that irregardless of a will or the way you've written your will, that property, when one of you pass away, automatically goes to the other person 100%. So joint tenancy, think of it as a lateral. When one of you pass away, the other person owns it 100%. The other way to hold title in both of your names is tenants in common. And tenants in common mean when, let's say, for example, two friends or two sisters buy a property together and they want to be able to give their half of the house property to their family. And basically, it just means if one of them pass away, it does not automatically go to the other person. Basically, that half would have to be bequeathed or by way of will given to whoever they wish it to go to. So that's important for us to talk about. So we let the other lawyer know that because the seller's lawyer is the one that prepares the deed, and they have it typed up, and they have their seller sign it, and that's what we receive on closing. I'm going to take a break for a minute, and we'll be right back. Hi, it's Barb, and we're back talking about if you're buying a home. This is Cobequid Community Radio, 97.5 CIOE, the voice of your community, and the voice of Fall River right now, because that's where I practice law, at Fall River Law Office. Anyway, so we were talking about the kinds of things that I do between the time when we first meet and then when we meet for the second time to close on the purchase of your property. Okay, so the one other thing I wanted to talk about was the seller, and when I do up your closing costs, I always indicate this as well. If your house that you're buying is heated by oil or propane, the seller has the choice, unless the contract indicates otherwise, whether to fill the oil tank or the propane tank or both. If they decide to do that, then basically, in addition to the purchase price, you're paying for a full tank of oil and or a full tank of propane. So that would be added into the adjustments as well. So our next time that we meet, you're coming in and basically we're going over the mortgage, we're having it signed, there's maybe several disclosure documents that basically just indicate here's the amount you're borrowing, your rate and everything. We're having you sign what's called the deed transfer tax. So this is this HRM municipal tax that is charged every time a property is purchased in HRM. Whatever the purchase price is, it's 1.5% of the purchase price. So, for example, if you're buying a $300,000 home, that would mean that the deed transfer tax is $4,500. And that's part of the closing cost breakdown that I would give you. So that form is signed, and then we're basically going over the mortgage, the adjustments, and I'm explaining to you exactly the amount that you need to bring in when it comes to the closing date. And when we're doing the statement of adjustments, if you can think of it in this way, the first page is basically myself and the seller's lawyer trying to figure out to the penny how much do we send over to buy. So we're adjusting for that tax, you know, proportioning, you know, how much we owe the seller back if he's overpaid the taxes, what you've put down as a deposit, if there's an oil tank fill up or a propane tank fill up, and sometimes if there's credits, and there may be credits after that you've done your inspection and there were some problems and you negotiated through your realtor a credit of $1,000 for flooring or roof repairs or something like that. So that would come off the price as well. So on that first page, again, myself and the seller's lawyer have confirmed that this is the amount that you send, that we're sending over to buy the house on closing. So I'm going through that with you to make sure that you follow that. And then on the second page, the mortgage company has indicated how much funds they'll be sending me on the day of closing. So that figure is at the top of the second page. And then all your other closing costs are added up. And then basically you see a total as to what is required to buy your house. And I subtracted from the amount that I get from the bank in terms of mortgage funds, and the difference is basically your down payment and your closing costs. So that's the figure that I go over with you and show you and make sure that you're clear as to how we arrived at that figure. And then you have to go to your bank and get either a bank draft or certified check made payable in trust to my office. And that gets delivered. It could be a couple of days before the closing or the day off the closing. I always indicate to clients that basically the sooner that I get that money and the sooner I get the mortgage money on the day of closing, which 99% of the time mortgage money are deposited right into our trust account. So it's just a matter of having your funds, and then I'm able to cut a check and buy your house the next day or a few days in advance. Now, also in that last meeting, we talk about the possibilities of what could happen on the closing date. Normally, you have an opportunity to walk through the property one last time. So it's not a full inspection like you did when you originally put your offer in. It's so, as I describe it, it's not a fine-tooth comb again, checking everything out. But what it is to make sure that nothing has changed in relationship to the last time that you've seen the property. So you're looking to make sure there's no major damage, there's not a water leak in the basement, or the roof is leaking, or there's some major damage. Hopefully everything is fine when you do that walkthrough, which is something that you'll arrange with your realtor. So your realtor will be in touch with the seller's realtor if there's two of them involved, and you don't want to do your walkthrough until the seller is completely out, because you don't want the seller to go back and remove other items. So basically you want to do this walkthrough when they've really moved out. Sometimes it'll be the night before, but more often than not, it's that morning. And so again, you're looking to ensure that everything is what it was when you last saw the house, and that the items that's indicated in your agreement of purchase and sale that was supposed to stay are actually still in the house. And you can actually do a little test on the dishwasher, the stove, make sure everything is working, because normally your contract would say that these items should be in good working order. So I need to hear, or the lawyer that you're using as you're buying your house need to hear from you in relation to that final walkthrough, that final inspection, because we want to make sure before we send the money over that, you know, everything is okay. What happens if it's not, Barb? Well, I always say that that's not the end of the world. We can still close if there's a problem. So let's talk about the possibility of a small problem versus something large. So in the past, I've had different experiences where we have to hold back money or provide a credit. And usually, this is all negotiated with your realtor and the other realtor. Lawyers only usually get involved with the problem of a final walkthrough if there's some difficulty in relationship to the realtors having a problem negotiating with the seller and the buyer. Good realtors can basically sort this stuff out, and they do an excellent job. But basically, what they're trying to do is sort of come up with, how do we deal with this? And an example would be a set of blinds that was supposed to stay and they're not there. So there's two things that can be done. We can either do a holdback or do a credit. And a holdback just means that we hold back a certain amount of money until the blinds are brought back. So it doesn't hold up you getting your key and moving in. But the thing is both parties have to agree, and both parties have to agree on how much of a holdback. So hopefully the realtors can have a sense of what those blinds could be worth. If they're $20, you know, Walmart blinds versus a $200 custom made set of blinds. And hopefully that can be negotiated. And if they're brought back, then the money, that $200 or $20 would be released. If they can't find the blinds, or they're on the road to BC and they can't, you know, get the blinds back to us, well, then again, it can be negotiated as to how much, and we would pay the seller that much less, and it would be called a credit. So in other words, okay, we'll keep $200 and we'll buy our own set of blinds. So that's how that final inspection can work out. And the same thing if something significant goes wrong. I recall when Hurricane Juan hit, I was doing a sale that day. I had no power. I had to handwrite my closing letter. And there was a problem on the final inspection. A tree had fallen, not hit the house, but basically it was in the backyard, and how are we going to deal with that? So basically, I think it was resolved in the end that there was a credit or a holdback. I'm not sure exactly, but those are the kinds of things that, you know, again, good realtors can sort out. And it could be something as significant as a water leak in the basement, and to get contractors in and get prices, and then, you know, a negotiation has to take place about whether or not a whole back will be done until it's fixed, or, you know, we'll just fix it and take $2,000-$3,000 off the purchase price. So those are the things that I need to hear from you on the day of the closing. Okay, so on the day of the closing, it's just a matter of couriers, in fact. So the seller's lawyer will deliver the deed and closing documents and sometimes a key. I always say to purchasers, I don't know if I'll have a key to give to you. If I don't, then your realtor will give it to you. And so my job is to, you know, receive the funds from the mortgage company, have your funds, and do up a check and get it over to the other lawyer by courier. One of the things that we haven't talked a lot about was looking at the title to the property. And we do what's called a sub-search on the day of the closing to make sure, since the property was migrated, I do a search and I basically make sure that there's no liens or judgments or any change in the state of the property or the title to the property since it was migrated. We have a few extra minutes, so I'm going to talk about migration. A lot of you have probably have heard this word, a lot of you haven't. And what it means is basically it's a new system that kicked in the year 2003 or 4, I forget. But basically it's a new system in which instead of the buyer in the past, lawyer, our job was to search the title to make sure that who you bought the property from, they bought it from Mary Brown and Mary Brown bought it from John Smith, and we go all the way back. In the old system, basically every time a property was purchased, the buyer's lawyer had to search the title to the property. So when the property was sold again and someone else was buying it, and if they went to a different lawyer, they'd be searching the property as well. So what was happening was a title search was being done over and over again. So basically the reason for that was because our malpractice insurance required us to have our own title search in our file. And basically we could never rely on what another lawyer did. So basically, our malpractice insurance, the government, and the Barrister Society got together and created this new system. They called it the Registry 2000 Project, and it finally kicked in across the province. I think it was the end of 2003 or 4, and again, I apologize for not having that date. I'll confirm that on another program. But the importance is migration just means that that title search is done one last time, and now it's usually done by the seller's lawyer, and all that information in the title search is put online, on what's called property online, and only certain lawyers can do migration. We've had to have training, we pay to have access to the property online system where all documents are now recorded, mortgages, deeds, and everything. And once a property is migrated to the new land registry system, and I won't get into the details of what we do when we do that, a curtain goes down and you never have to do that 40-year search again. So lawyers in the future, once a property is migrated, it's a one-time shot, a one-time deal. Once it's in the system, you never have to do it again. And a lawyer can rely on what another lawyer does. And we do a sub-search from the date that it was migrated. So if I finish a migration today on August the 26th, then if I sell the property on September the 2nd, then basically the buyer's lawyer will do a search from September 2nd back to August 26th. They don't have to go behind that. Now, one thing that I didn't mention in our initial consultation when I meet with a buyer, I do pull up the information on property online and show the clients and review the document to make sure that it is correct. We're all human and lawyers can make mistakes as well, but we work well together as real estate lawyers. If there is something that was missed or overlooked in a migration, the lawyer that's reviewing that document would get in touch with the migrating lawyer, and 99% of the time the correction is made if it was an oversight. So we as lawyers are still reviewing the migration to be sure that it was done properly, and there are steps that we take to make sure that when you buy your property, the title and the information on the property online system is correct. Okay, we're going to take a break for a couple of minutes and we'll be right back. Okay, so one other thing that we didn't talk about as well, I wanted to add, is when you initially come in to see me, I pull up the information on property online, And say, for example, there are benefits and burdens showing. And what that means is an example of a burden would be a restrictive covenant. And sometimes in your agreement of purchase and sale, it indicates that you have an opportunity to review those and be happy with them. So say, for example, you're buying this place and you're assuming you can build a detached garage. Well, when we meet, I pull up those restrictive covenants on the property online system, print them off, and you can read them over. So for example, if the restrictive covenants of the house that you're looking at buying does not allow for a detached garage to be built, then we have the opportunity for you to get out of the deal. That's a really important thing to keep in mind in terms of coming to see a lawyer right away and meeting them in person rather than just calling up and asking for a price. I truly believe that price is not everything. The example that I always use when I describe this to clients over the phone to push them to come in and see me is, I don't know if you guys remember that there used to be a store that was quite cheap. I called it the B&W Boutique, or my sister Kay did, and it was called Byway. And you certainly could get things for quite a good price there, but the quality was probably not the best. So, you know, if you wanted something good and something and you had the extra money to spend, you might go to the Bay or Sears. So I always use that as an example. You get what you pay for, and price is not everything. And I'm not saying that I'm expensive and I'm not saying that I'm cheap. I know I'm reasonably priced and I do a good job, and I think most lawyers do the same. I was talking to a lawyer that's practiced almost, I think it was 40 years, and he talked about how legal fees haven't changed in all of those years, and I thought, wow, that's quite depressing. But anyway, it's not always about the price. That's what I want you to keep in mind. Come in and make sure that, you know, we can get along and you can understand the kinds of things that I want you to be responsible for and what my job is. It's the biggest purchase of your life, and I think it's important for you to meet that person that's going to be in charge of it. Anyway, so the other things that could be on the property online document when you first come in and the property has been migrated would be, let's say, for example, right-of-ways. There could be an easement or right-of-way. Those two words are interchangeable. And that means that someone has, and if your property is burdened by a right-of-way, it just means that someone has the right to travel over your property. Now, hopefully we can pull up the information and show you exactly with a survey what that means, if it's a driveway over your property or let's say access to the lake where they're allowed to walk. And sometimes it could be a benefit where you have access to the lake and I can pull up a map and show you this is where you have the ability to walk over someone else's property to get to the lake. So a lot of people don't realize that when you have a right-of-way over your land, it doesn't mean that that person owns that part of your land. You still own the land. They just have the right to travel over it. And the same if you have that benefit. You get to travel over that person's land. Okay. Anyway, so back to the closing date. So hopefully your walkthrough has went well. You call, you let us know, we get the check ready, we get it over, and it's basically just myself and the lawyer confirming that that they receive our funds and that we have their deed and everything is closed. So on the day of closing, we usually give you a key and that's it. You're probably thinking, what about all the documentation I signed? That all has to get recorded at the Registry of Deeds on Property Online. So once that's your deeds recorded, your mortgage is recorded, we send you out a nice package, a closing package, and we also say, have to do the same type of report package to your bank, confirming that the deed and the mortgage has been recorded. So you'll get a nice package in the mail, hopefully within a few weeks after the closing. Anyway, that sort of wraps up all of what I wanted to talk about today. This is Barb McClellan, and my show is called Turning Ourselves Upside Down. This is Cobequid Community Radio, CIOE-FM, and I want to thank my producers, Jim Francis and Josh McDonald, who's also learning the ropes here at the Cobequid radio station. And we'll talk next week.